Hello and welcome to the Old and In the Way podcast.com with Bob and Mark. Today we're thrilled to have as a guest the bass player for the rock group Foreigner, Jeff Pilson, who also played in the rock group Dokken and Machine and has a lengthy discography that, according to Wikipedia, it appears Jeff may have gotten his start in San Francisco with a rock opera called Rock Justice, co-created by Marty Balin of the Jefferson Airplane and Starship. And coincidentally, Bob Heyman, who's here with us today. Mm-hmm. And let me throw it to Bob. And Bob, let's get this show started.
Yeah, definitely coincidentally. And I'm thrilled you could make it through the word discography.
I have been working on that word more than I can tell you this morning. And
there you go. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. It's been way too long since we've actually been in the same place together, even virtually.
Yes, it is.
But I wanted to, basically, part of the things I'd like to cover, besides your yoga pursuits, which I find interesting, is your take on the music industry. You've sustained a long and illustrious career, and the business has changed so much in the course of that, both from the medium, from DVDs and streaming, and one of the most things that we had Dennis McNally as a guest, and he's the historian of the Grateful Dead, and he mentioned that on any given weekend there are 800 tribute or cover band, Grateful Dead cover bands playing around the country. And when I was a kid, nobody would think of basically going to see a Frank Sinatra cover band, and that was about as far in the past as the Dead are for today. So that's one of the things I certainly find interesting. There's Foreigner cover bands, Fleetwood Mac cover band, all of that. But tell me, just to start, why don't you kind of tell the audience a little bit about your career and how you got started and what you're doing and what you've and the secret of your success, if there is one.
Wow. Okay. That's big stuff. That's a lot of stuff to cover. Okay. So first of all, yes, I my very first major label record was the Rock Justice record that came out in 1980. I was fortunate enough to be involved with Bob, Marty Balin, and Mike Varney, who was also heavily involved. Mike Varney, who coincidentally got me in Dokken just a few years later. So the Rock Justice album came out. I was in San Francisco at the time. The San Francisco scene kind of dried up. I moved to Los Angeles right in 1983 when things were heating up down there. And I was fortunate enough to get in Dokken through Mike Varney. Had a lovely career during the 80s with Dokken. We broke up in 89. I then played with people like Dio and MSG and some other wonderful artists. Dokken got back together in the mid 90s. We had a nice little run. We then broke up again, we didn't break up. I left the band in early 2001 after the, lucky enough to be in a movie called Rockstar that came out in 2001. Unfortunately, it came out on September 9th, so 2 days before September 11th, 2001. Still was a wonderful experience with that movie. And I've been in Foreigner since 2004. So there's a brief synopsis of my career. But your original question was about the music business. And that's a critical thing, because you're right, I've had a very long, wonderful, illustrious career, due in part to people like Bob, who was, who believed in me at a very early point. And that was when belief from management really meant something, and it, translated into major label dealings. And it was just a different time in the music business. Dokken, it took three albums for Dokken to really crack. And that was because we had record company support and belief from the record company. Those things don't exist anymore. So my fear about the music business now is that you're not going to get people having long, illustrious careers like I've had, because there's just not the infrastructure for it anymore. It's geared towards the top hits, and that's about it. There's no building up of artists like there was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I mean, you know, there was a lot of building up of artists that helped create the music business scene. And now that, you know, the major labels are owned strictly by corporations who it's only about the bottom line dollars, it's just not an industry that's set up to develop artists anymore. And that's a real concern of mine. And now that streaming is going to eventually be probably the nearly only, if not exclusive, way that people hear music, well, the revenue stream from streaming is horrific for the artist. It is horrific. It's unconscionable. I mean, I'll give you an example. Pharrell, who, you know, the song Happy, I don't even know when that came out, but had billions of streams. Billions. It was a huge hit. His revenue stream from that entire song, from that entire campaign, was $40,000. Oh, and that was as big a hit as you can get. That is ridiculous. It is just insane. If that doesn't
how do the artists take it back? Because,
well, the artists are going to have to do what the writers and actors just did when the with the SAG after strike. We're going to have to negotiate something better. And it's critical that we do, because it doesn't affect me as much, because a legacy artist, I mean, we do sell CDs still. People do still buy CDs. You know, they buy Foreigner CDs, they buy Dokken CDs. So there are CDs that get sold. So I still get income from that. But if I only had to depend on streaming income, it would be next to nothing. So it's going to have to be renegotiated. Younger artists won't have a chance of having a career if that's the only way they can sustain their income. So the answer to your question about the music business is, I think it's in a very fragile state right now that if it doesn't get repaired, could be really detrimental to music coming out in the future. And the quality of music, because you're not going to have quality people attracted to a field where there's nothing to be made.
Yeah.
I've got a slightly off the wall question here. I been watching Dokken and Machine and other Jeff Pilson videos the last couple of days.
Okay.
And if we go back to like the mid 80s and the MTV thing, let me check my notes here. There was a video that It's Not Love.
Yes.
Where you're on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are having way too much fun. Yeah. It's rock and roll. It's sexist. It's just a great, fun video. And I'm thinking, we're in the Me Too age now. How does that even play? It was wonderfully perfect for the times. And I always thought that there was a almost sexual component to rock and roll, because when I was in high school, the guys in the bands were the only people the girls were interested in.
Well, yeah. Well, frankly, the videos that came out in the 80s could not stand up to today. I mean, they wouldn't make it very far.
Generation Z would have you guys in court.
Yeah, that's right. And
political, you know, incorrectness.
And listen, I think there's a lot of good about that. I mean, I think that the sexist nature of rock, especially in the 80s, it was pretty bad in the 80s. I mean, it was bad.
It worked.
You know, I'm glad to see that that's gone. But that doesn't mean sex can't be part of rock and roll. I mean, that would be ridiculous to take that away. And I think music is, I mean, Beyonce is a very sexual artist. Taylor Swift is sexual, let's face it. So, I mean, there's sexual.
It's just being packaged differently.
It's being packaged differently. And there's a different slant on it. I mean, the slant in the 80s really was that, you know, we're the males and we dominate, and, you know, our toxic masculinity can take over you submissive females. That really was part of the message. It was. And I'm glad that that's gone. That's not healthy. That's not.
But what's AC/DC without it?
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, AC/DC, you don't have to see all that music as being, you know, toxic masculinity. I think there's a lot of just sexuality in there too. So let's separate the sexuality from the sexist. You know, not everything is sexist, but
there was a lot of it.
I mean, let's just move on without that stuff, and you know, hopefully nobody will sue us for a video that we did, you know, 40 years ago.
Because remember when the big three was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So
exactly,
what are we down to?
No, I think sex, drugs, and rock and roll is still very much a part of it. Sex still has to be a part of rock. It just has to be. It's just not sexist.
Yeah. Getting back to the revenue model, as I understand it, for most touring bands, they make any money they make is on the merchandise sale.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends. I mean, Foreigner, you know, we make money from our guarantees too, because our guarantees are pretty high nowadays. But what is really the case is that most bands, their income is derived from touring. And you know, in Foreigner, it's. I mean, we make some money from CD sales, because we do still sell CDs. And in fact, Foreigner as an entity, as a classic rock artist, we sell big CDs. Of course, I don't participate in a lot of those because they're the original band CDs, but they do still sell CDs. And then, of course, we've actually, it's funny, since I've been in the band, which is since 2004, we've sold over 2 million CDs, a million two of which are stuff that I produced. So we have been selling CDs in the last 20 years, but think of how much different that would have been years ago. It would have been way, way more. So, and still, even with our CD sales, which are, like I say, good, and in terms of Foreigner, the entire entity, it's a good stream of income as CDs, but streaming, the income very low, even though we do really well with streaming as a classic artist. We do a lot of streams, by far the main income is from touring, and including merchandising, but the touring is the main thing. And you know, it was so different years ago. It was the record that really counted, and the touring, if you made money, that's great, but you really made money from the record. It's exactly the opposite now.
So promoters and agents tell me that one reason for the rise of the tribute bands is that people don't want to come out of their houses to hear music that they're not familiar with. So classic bands like Foreigner benefit from that. The tribute bands benefit from that. But that seems to me to be at the expense of new music and new artists. And I know part of that is that the record labels aren't making those young artists big, so that their music gets heard. It just seems somewhat, I don't know, hopeless is a bad word to use on a nice Thursday morning, but I don't know how you get heard. And you know, if you want to be a working young musician, you learn Beatles and Foreigner and Fleetwood Mac songs and play in a tribute band.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I think, well, that's kind of why I had the dour tone that I had about my state of the music business, is it's not set up to develop new artists. And yes, the revenue stream has to change, but also the infrastructure around it has to change to develop new music. I think the only way that that's going to happen, and I'm holding out, this is what I'm holding out hope for, is what caused all the other industry revolutions was generally a huge artist that changed stuff. Elvis, all of a sudden made all the rock and roll stuff of the 50s okay, but you know, and then suddenly you were able to hear Little Richard and you know, Jerry Lee Lewis and everything. It's because Elvis opened the doors, and then rock and roll was huge. So that caused that change. When the Beatles came in, everything changed, the model changed, and all of a sudden you could be a band that wrote songs and you could, you know, put out your own albums, and think of how long that business model sustained. And the Beatles had a lot to do with that. They really, really did. And in fact, and then you had the Michael Jackson thing, which also, by the way, helped artists negotiate better deals when Michael Jackson happened. Guns N' Roses was a huge shift. It really shifted the music scene. we need another huge shift. We need another young artist who is creative, but undeniable, makes catchy music that people need to hear. And that young artist has to change the trajectory of the music business. They need to change the revenue stream, and they're going to need to change how the music business reacts. Because the good thing is if some young artist comes out of nowhere that changes everything, well, what are all the major labels going to do? They're going to try and copy that. And so they're going to go out and they're going to start looking for young artists again to try and develop, to come up with that winning formula. So that's about, to me, that's the biggest hope that we have. And I have faith in the young.
They would need to bring out someone to compete with iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, that seem to draw on all this. At this time, I kind of look at an original, powerful rock group as the Foo Fighters, yet I don't see them as being the people that you're suggesting. It would be
They're already too old. I mean, you know, Dave Grohl is, you know, has been doing this for 30 years now. You know, that's not a new artist by any means.
And you've heard of Vampire Weekend?
I've heard of them.
They made it in streaming before streaming had really happened.
Yeah.
They Googled what was the biggest two keywords on Google. And at that time, there was Weekend at Bernie's and some sort of vampire movies were big. So the only reason they came up with that name were they were the two biggest keywords.
Great.
And that literally birthed them onto the internet and began their careers.
But where
is that technological genius who's 19? Is into music that goes, I'm going to build a company that takes care of these musicians, because in the end, what it will do is bring out better music.
Well, you're right. I think it's going to take a 19-year-old. And my daughter happens to be 19 and wants to go to
perfect.
So there you go.
Hey, it's all happening here right now.
Right today. Yeah. I think that was great that they did that. I think, honestly, it's going to take somebody who is also a little more creative musically, that comes up with, you know, they have to be innovative. Now, maybe the three of us won't recognize it. You know, maybe we won't get it. In fact, kind of hopefully we won't, because we're too old. But if the young people catch on,
takes
over Spotify and it takes over iTunes and all that kind of thing, I think that's what it's going to take. But it's really going to take that severe a reaction, I think. And I think it means a much bigger force than any artist we've seen probably since Nirvana.
Wow.
Industry could have a moral compass.
I don't think it'll ever have a moral compass. I think it'll have a musical compass and a business compass that wants to see competition with this, whatever this great new thing is.
Wow. Could Taylor Swift do it?
Well, I think Taylor Swift is too mainstream pop, and there's no rebellious aspect to her music, and it doesn't look
like that to her ex-boyfriends.
Yeah, well, true. But I just think she's too much. It has to be a reaction to that. It almost has to be probably the opposite of that, and in my opinion.
So one of the you mentioned a bunch of things that really influenced the business or changed the business. I was thinking that hip hop did that too, sort of.
Absolutely. Hip hop, huge change in the industry, shifted a lot of people away from rock, frankly.
Yeah.
Which is why you got to commend the people that tried to combine hip hop and rock. I think it's great. We may not identify with whatever this new trend would be. It probably would be a combination of a lot of elements that maybe things we wouldn't like, country and hip hop or something. I don't know, But whatever it is, if it appeals to the youth and causes a movement, it has to cause a movement, and it has to be a reaction to the mainstream. And I don't think we've seen anything like that in a long time.
You've over the years, I've certainly dealt with a lot of the record companies. There used to be A&R guys who, as they say, had ears, you know, who were looking for things that were new and exciting. Is that just a bygone time and there's not going to be those kind of guys again?
Well, there's none of those guys right now because, like I say, because they're not really set up to win. That's that, you know, you're almost punished when you get new stuff, you know, as a major label A&R guy. You have to be really, you have to have all the eggs in the basket. And it means that they've already done well on social media. They, you know, all the work has been done for the A&R guys already. It will only change when something comes out of nowhere and the A&R guys are left chasing after it. And to me, it's going to be homegrown, probably from the internet, I hope, because I think that would be the way to get worldwide exposure. And it's going to have to take the major labels by storm, you know, a bit of a sneak attack, if you will. So I think that there could be an era of guys with ears again, but it's only going to be, they're only going to have the infrastructure to do anything if they're in a position where they have to start looking for new, fresh music. And that case, it's not the case right now.
Yeah, I'd encourage your daughter to watch this video.
Yeah, she understands. We talk about this a lot. Yeah. You know, she wants to be a music manager and she wants to go to law school in order to do it because she understands, number one, being a woman in the music business.
We'll just arrange a Silicon Valley venture capitalist, possibly Roger McEnany, who's an artista, Bob. And this is the next adventure. And then it could be run by AI, but controlled. Yeah. And we're off and running. And then all three of us get a small percentage.
Well, okay.
I like it. That's a vision. But I think your daughter's perfect. I think the next big thing should be run by women.
Yeah, well, I think it should be run by women who are music. I mean, my daughter loves music. I mean, she can sing. She plays the cello. She plays the bass a little bit. She sings beautifully. She could have pursued a musical career, but she's just passionate about music and she wants to see good music get exposure. So, you know, I it's going to be up to that generation to figure it out. They're going to have to monetize it better and they're going to have to create more exposure to new, fresh things. And that's not an easy task. Advertised world.
No, that's hard. I'm impressed with empowered women, maybe because I saw Barbie last night.
So. Okay, I still haven't seen it, but I need to see it soon.
just remember, Bob, Ryan Gosling doesn't eat quiche.
Okay.
Do you understand the reference?
No, I know he's Ken, but I haven't.
There's a book out, Real Men Don't Eat Quiche.
Oh, okay.
It came out in the 80s.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm into obscure references. Speaking of obscure references, until I typed in your email, I thought, oh, no slip. Maybe he's a surfer too. And then I went, oh, geez, it's his name spelled backwards.
It is. But I am an alcoholic who's had March 3rd, it'll be 35 years sober. And
Good for you.
Slip is kind of an ironic thing there as well.
Yeah, I used to be a bartender. Watching people go Jekyll and Hyde on you 8 hours a day, it had its wear and tear. But in the end, I met some interesting people.
Imagine.
So I wanted to get into your yoga pursuit and the importance of meditation. And tell me about that. I was a little bit surprised when I saw you first post about that because I think it would be about music and not meditation. But tell me more.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, I've been doing yoga since 1978 and I've found it's been my salvation. It's kept me sane. It's helped keep me sober. Both physically, it's helped keep me limber. I mean, I just had back surgery 7 weeks ago, you know, very intense back surgery. And I feel that my yoga practice has helped me adapt better and recover better. And then the meditation is, I mean, that's my salvation. You know, I'm a pretty neurotic individual and I am an alcoholic. So, you know, I got a crazy mind that goes into very dark spaces. And the meditation has just been a godsend. And I've, you know, starting in 2020 in the pandemic, you know, my wife has a yoga studio. It's called Hot for Yoga. That's why it says Hot for Yoga on my Zoom thing. You know, during the pandemic, she had to start going virtual. So we thought, well, hey, let's do a virtual meditation class. And I started doing it and I love doing it. So right now, if anybody's interested in the virtual meditation class, which, by the way, anyone can do, it's not anything advanced or, you know, you don't have to be a yoga scholar or anything like that. It's very much made for everybody. But go to hotforyogascv.com and look up the virtual meditation schedule. Please join us right now, at least through February. It's going to be Sundays at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. But join us for that. It's just a great class. It's a half hour class of meditation. We do simple breathing, simple postures. And then we do one meditation technique per class. We try different ones. We alternate them. But it's been really fun, a really great thing. And please join us. It'd be great.
Right on.
Where is her studio?
Her studio is in Old Town New Hall here in Santa Clarita, California.
Ah, you're in Santa Clarita.
I am.
I'm in Santa Barbara and Bob is in Santa Petaluma.
Santa Petaluma, right? I love it.
Jeff, do you want to talk about any of your own original music that you're working on that people might want to hear?
Well, sure. In February, a Revolution Saints album is coming out February 9th. And that is that's the band that I have with Dean Castronova from Journey, who plays drums, and he's the drummer of Journey, but he's also a fantastic singer, and he's the singer for Revolution Saints. And then joining us in that band is Joel Hoekstra, who is an incredible guitar player from Whitesnake and a lot of other things. He's an incredible musician. So that record, Against the Wind, comes out February 9th. We've already got a single out, and it's been getting a phenomenal response. It's a really exciting band. It's kind of like heavy Journey, so it's really cool. Then I have The End Machine, which is coming out March 8th. That record is called Quantum Phase. That's with George Lynch, who George and I are in Dokken together. And the drummer is Steve Brown, who's the brother of Wild Mick Brown, who was in The End Machine when we started, but has since retired from drumming. So his little brother, who plays and sings just like him, is in the band, and it's fabulous. And we have a new singer by the name of Girish Pradhan, who's from India, who is absolutely phenomenal. He is just incredible. You have to hear it to believe it. The video for Silent Winter is out now. That's The End Machine, Silent Winter. Check it out. It's incredible. The singer is incredible. If you're at all a Dokken fan, you're going to love this stuff. It really is fantastic. And then Reb Beach is coming here on Sunday, and we're going to start writing the next Black Swan record. Sure, it won't come out till sometime in 2025, but there is the Black Swan project with Reb Beach, Robin McCauley, and Matt Starr. So got lots of music coming out. I'm very excited about all of it. But Revolution Saints and M Machine are going to be out real soon. Check those out. And I appreciate the time to get to promote them a little.
And will any of those bands be touring?
Not this year, I don't believe. 2024, I mean, March 1st, I start in with Foreigner. We're on our second year of our farewell tour, which doesn't mean we're going away. But this is the last year that we're going to do the 9 months of touring thing. You know, we're going to be out till Thanksgiving, basically. And this is the last year we're doing that. So we have a great tour with Styx and John Waite coming up this summer. Going to be very exciting. So lots of touring. I don't see the other projects being able to tour this year, but my schedule is going to open up a lot in 2025 because Foreigner won't be on that 9 months of a year touring thing. And George Lynch too is retiring his Lynch Mob from long touring. So we'll have a little more time in 2025. We'll see what we do then. But in the meantime, lots of touring with Foreigner.
Awesome. And that's just in the U.S. or are you going overseas?
Yeah. Foreigner is just the U.S. this year. We're hoping that we can find some stuff in outside the U.S. for next year. It's tricky, but we're working on that. So fingers crossed.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I think we probably can wind it up. It's exciting that you've got new projects and new music coming, and everybody who's loved your music over the years should check all of that out. And Jeff, I'd love to get together. I guess is Foreigner going to play up here?
I'd have to look. I would imagine so.
I'll check, but it would be great to get together.
It would.
And I'd like to recommend to people out there how much fun I've had watching Dokken and End Machine videos. The End Machine videos, the musicianship, unblanking believable.
Oh, well,
intense,
thank you.
Beautiful, right on. Check it out, End Machine.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very proud of that. Thank you.
And the aerials coming in, it's just great videos.
Cool. I appreciate that. I really do.
Awesome, Jeff. It's been a privilege to have you.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's been wonderful. Went quick.
Hey, we want to have you back.
That would be
got
lovely.
Something to promote, let us know.
That would be lovely. You know what? I am always old and in the way, so I would love it.
I remember when you weren't, but anyway.
Yes, you do. You remember when I was the kid, right? Here we are 45 years later and you know,
everything old is new again, as we can tell from all these tribute bands of the old band. So
exactly. You know, isn't that amazing?
It truly is amazing. It's this whole tribute thing. I mean, you don't even call them cover bands anymore, they're tribute bands.
Right.
And the Stones were a cover band when they got started.
Yeah.
So
the Stones and
the Beatles were a cover band doing tunes before they got started. So I think it's a righteous place right now.
Sure. Why not?
I'm just rooting for that big change we talked about.
Yes, me too.
Makes it more profitable. And
it happened here today.
Musicians and more likely for young musicians to make it.
Yes.
Anyway. And that great thought of positiveness. Jeff, thank you so much. This has been a real treat for me.
Oh, well, thanks. It's been great for me, too. It's great to see you, Bob.
Yeah, great to see you, Jeff.
Been too
great
long.
To see you, Mark. You too.
Nice to meet you, Jeff.
All right. Nice to meet you as well. Thank you for everything.
Namaste, as we say it at the end of our yoga sessions.
There we go. Thank you, guys. Well, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.